This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 23rd October 2020. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 22nd of October 2020, which this week has been edited by Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas. Your reader today is Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Toxic Police Unit in Misconduct Trial, Two new solar farms planned for district, and row over river access. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Toxic police unit in misconduct trial. A toxic and abhorrent culture at a Hampshire constabulary unit resulted in its officers making dozens of sexist, racist and homophobic remarks, a police misconduct hearing has claimed. Six officers from the Serious and Organised Crime Unit, SOCU, North Office, at the Northern Police Investigation Centre, based in Basingstoke, are facing serious gross misconduct proceedings over the alleged comments, which include a bunch of gay, and then it's a starred out, unpleasant word, and pikey. The officers facing the charges are retired Detective Inspector Tim Ireson, Detective Sergeant Oliver Lage, Detective Sergeant Gregory Wilcox, former PC Craig Bannerman, Trainee Detective Constable Andrew Ferguson, and PC James Oldfield. Jason Beer QC, acting on behalf of Hampshire Constabulary, said this was a specialist police unit that operated in relative isolation to the rest of the force. Mr. Beer said that the isolation and lack of leadership and supervision from Mr. Arison and DS Wilcox led to a toxic and abhorrent culture. They also made several homophobic comments calling people queers during several conversations and using the phrase horrible tranny and then an unpleasant F word. The remarks were heard after a complaint was made about the team and a bugging device was installed in the office between March the 9th and April the 2nd in 2018. But others were discovered during a search of their work emails and phones. A private SOCU WhatsApp group has also become subject of the investigation, which saw PC Ferguson, PC Oldfield and Mr. Bannerman make offensive statements. They made numerous jokes about Detective Constable Sol Korantang, who is not accused as part of the case, by making racist statements and sending videos and photos to each other, claiming they contained the officer. The unit has been described by fellow officers as a lad's pad and stuck in a time from 25 years ago. The hearing was also told that DS Wilcox sent 168 personal messages and received 262 on his work phone, much of which focused on his role at Stockbridge Youth Football Club between September the 1st, 2017 and June the 5th, 2018. PC Oldfield is also alleged to have attended work on April the 1st, 2018 while unfit for duty due to excessive alcohol consumption and asked not to be sent to help a colleague with a rape investigation in Southampton. He is recorded as saying, "I just don't really want to speak to anyone. I just don't want anyone to realise that I'm still pissed." Laughter. Well, not pissed. Did I say that out loud? Mr. Beer said that P.C. Oldfield denied still being intoxicated when arriving at work, and Arson did not consider him unfit for work or that he was under the influence of drink. Giving evidence on Tuesday, Mr. Arison was asked by Chair John Bassett when he considered a remark moved from humour to bullying, to which he replied, when there was malicious intent to undermine that person. The allegations against Mr. Arison is that he failed to challenge or report any of his members of staff for their remarks and behaviour. He said, I was definitely mindful of the risk of humour becoming bullying. I was very clear in my own mind that that was not acceptable. D.S. Wilcox is also alleged to have falsely recorded hours and overtime on the 23rd of March 2018 after he attended a driver's awareness course and did not carry out his full shift. The hearing continues.
Two new solar farms planned for district. Preliminary plans have been submitted for two solar farms in the Winchester district. Developers want to build a large solar farm near Three Maids Hill and also on farmland northeast of Old Alsford near Armsworth. Agents for both developers have asked planners at the City Council whether a full environmental impact assessment is needed. Planning officers have said one is not required for the Three Maids Hill plan. A decision on the proposal for the Godsfield Lane near Armsworth is awaited, with a decision due yesterday, that was October the 22nd. The Three Maids Hill solar farm is likely to be more controversial as it is on a prominent site north of Winchester next to two main roads. The applicant, Environmental Asset Management, proposes a 45-hectare farm on four fields on arable downland between the A272 and the A34 north of Three Maids Hill roundabout. It would generate up to 25 megawatts, enough to power 8,965 homes. As well as hundreds of solar panels, there would be associated infrastructure including fencing, substations, storage containers and battery storage, so the power generated could be sent off to the national grid at the most efficient times. In a letter to the City Council, the agents, Pegasus, said of the proposal, This aims to address the local and national renewable energy targets and ultimately reduce the reliance on fossil fuel-based sources as a form of energy production. For the solar farm near Armsworth, ANESCO proposes one capable of generating approximately 10 megawatts of electricity for 40 years, enough to power 3,000 homes. The proposal for a solar farm next to the A31 near Ropley Dean in the summer was withdrawn after the applicant gauged the strength of local opposition against a farm at that location. Anne J. Peel, chairman of South Wanston Parish Council, was non-committal about the Three Maids Hill plan and told the Chronicle, South Wanston Parish Council has had sight of a request for a screening option for a solar farm on land to the east of the A272 near the water tower and has learned that Winchester City Council has decided that an environmental impact assessment isn't required for the proposed development and that all the issues can be addressed through the planning application process. We are expecting a presentation from the planning representative of the company concerned and will closely examine any planning application submitted. Richard Smith, principal ecologist at Winchester City Council, told his colleagues in planning, a number of protected species have been recorded in the vicinity, including barn owl, lapwing, skylark, brown long-eared bat and badger, and there is potential for many other protected species on site. Therefore, a full ecological report needs to assess the habitat suitability and presence of protected species, as well as mitigation and compensation measures in relation to predicted impacts, including impacts on lighting, on surrounding habitats. The proposed plan should show how the site is permeable to wildlife, including badgers, which may use the site for commuting and foraging. Local City Councillor Stephen Godfrey said, "My thoughts on this emerging process are that it is very difficult to the two other nearby concrete crusher proposals that would be a most unwelcome industrialisation of the countryside. The plan is to put in a solar farm is much more compatible with what with the surrounding areas, which is already marred in a minor way by existing developments, water tower, A34, oil drilling head. I believe that there is general acceptance among local residents that the electricity we all use has to come from least polluting and least damaging source possible. So this goal fails to all of us. So this goal falls to all of us to achieve. I think that the only matters of concern would be if access to footpaths, bridle paths or woodland were reduced, and that the land should be returned to agricultural use if and when the panels are removed." Initial reaction to the Armsworth area was opposed to the scheme, not least the person whose address is on the planning submission. Sarah Vay, in a letter to the council, said, "I am the owner of Godsfield Manor, and I am somewhat surprised that our address has been used to file the above application. I have no intention of building a solar farm on our land, and therefore deem it as a gross impertinence that by using our address, UNESCO has suggested to our neighbours and to the outside world that I would do so." Simon and Lucy James of Bugmore Hill, Old Alsford, told planners, "We are not against solar energy, far from it, but strongly believe it should be encouraged on brownfield sites or on the roofs of new buildings, not on greenfields. The countryside is very precious, is a very precious commodity in this day and age, something that many have benefited from in the last 6 months, and we need to save and conserve what we have left." Amanda and Ben Richardson of Spires Lane, Old Alsford, said, "We urgently wish to highlight the danger this installation with its heavy plant vehicles and extra traffic would bring to local road users, both in the construction phase and in its ongoing maintenance." Keith Betton, chairman of the Hampshire Ornithological Society, raised the issue of an important breeding site for turtle doves at Weald Wood. The Hampshire population is less than 20 pairs.
Row over river access. A battle is set to erupt over the barring of the public from the banks of the River Itchen. For decades, Cowdown near Itchen Abbas has been an area for villagers to use at their leisure. But now, the Environment Agency will be fencing it off for restoration work, meaning the locals will be shut out of their only access to the river. Diseased ash trees have already been lopped and branches placed in the river. This has sparked anger, and there is now a movement to register the area as a village green to win it back. City Councillor Jackie Porter told the Chronicle, "It is really disappointing that the landowners are fencing off the land, which may result in muddy paths, and as a result it is understood that we're all losing access to the river. People have enjoyed the countryside, and in particular this spot, for decades. Local residents have different views, but the vast majority are wanting to preserve the area so that the simple pleasures of the river and riverside are not lost. The squeal of delight as young children paddle, with or without wellies, enjoying a picnic alongside the beautiful river and view, allowing the dog to go for a drink, flying kites, running races, bat and bird watching, and watching cows in the water when they are grazed here." Nicholas Owen owns some of the land that is being fenced off, but said that the work is out of his control. I do not own or have any rights over the river, he said. It would therefore be more sensible and useful for you to talk to someone directly involved with the river. He has been asked for his opinion on the controversial scheme, but no response has been received. Richard Hunt and Andrew Impey are also registered landowners. Councillor Porter is continuing to ask residents for their views to see if they constitute enough evidence to register it as a river, as a village green. I've been asking residents for their views, and many have been offering to help in any way they can to save the landscape for the public to enjoy, she said. Hopefully the owners will think again. This summer was unusual. So many people took advantage of this unique spot. It felt like a little holiday, if only for a few minutes or hours. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Trust, which has recently applied for funding for more public access to the River Itchen, is in favour of fencing off the area. A local doctor told Councillor Porter, "We all know how important green spaces are for our health. This spot has always been used, but it was so important for so many during lockdown." One dog walker said, "It seems ridiculous overkill to fence it off after all these years." The Chronicle has contacted the Environmental Agency for a comment.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Farmer. Joyce Linda Mary Farmer, at Flowerdown Care Home in Winchester, aged 88, on the 15th of October. Hall. Raymond Hall, on the 30th of September. Hobbs. Ivor, known as Dark Stanley Hobbs. No date is given for his death, but he was aged 91. Hunt, Brian Hunt, on the 11th of October in Marlfield Nursing Home, aged 81. Jackson, Bridget Evelyn Jackson, on the 2nd of October, aged 87, at St Catherine's View Care Home. Riley, Heather Riley, on the 5th of October, aged 86, in hospital. And Vincent, Constant Cora Mary, known as Connie Vincent, in hospital on the 8th of October, aged 94. And now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment by Rosemary Baker, headed "The Choices We Make." When I and my fellow medical students graduated in 1974, we had already formed the 74-year club. We had formed the club and made donations when we started our clinical training, finding ourselves cast adrift after most of the other students had graduated and left Dundee. The idea was to cover the final year dinner guests and a yearbook to remember each other by. This year, 46 years later, we've gone onto Facebook. Many of us have just turned 70 or are about to. A good time to reflect and ask ourselves about the choices we made and any regrets we might have. One member has just shared with us all his first solo publications. A picture he painted now adorns the front cover of the Canadian Journal of Rural Medicine. Alongside it, he reflects that he achieved more than he ever thought he would and can look back on a satisfying career. I suspect that a lot of us can probably echo his words. Very few of us expected to achieve greatness. Indeed, we were surprised to have even got to medical school, let alone graduated. My plan was that having graduated, I would do my medical house job in infectious diseases and then do my surgical job in a place with lots of hands-on clinical experience, because I wanted to be a missionary and I felt that this was what God was calling me to do. Of course, this did not work out as I developed problems with my knees, and I felt the Methodist Missionary Society would see me as a bit of a liability. So other choices had to be made. I believe those choices were still guided by God, and a missionary, in a different way, as I became a psychiatrist and specialized in looking after people with learning disability and autism. My best friend from school also did medicine, but went to Manchester to study. We wrote sporadically and met occasionally. She became a general practitioner in Manchester. I was very surprised when, after a few years of updates on her children, I suddenly received a long letter all about her concerns about another local general practitioner. She had apparently raised her concerns with her Medical Defence Society, only to be told it was a serious matter to impugn the reputation of a medical colleague. She asked me, as a friend and fellow Christian, what she should do. I replied that I thought she should follow her conscience. She was evidently believed. Her concerns were, of course, about Dr. Harold Shipman. More lives could have been saved, but her choice to continue was vindicated and other lives were saved. Sadly, she died of cancer, but not before hearing that he had been found guilty. In our present time of great difficulty, a lot hinges on the choices we make and how these will affect the future, both for ourselves and others, and in particular generations to come. We see examples of people choosing to be kind and helpful to others, and then we see those who choose to be selfish and through their desire only to please themselves, causing harm and distress to others. Most people do know what is the right choice. R.I.P. Dr. Lyndon J. Reynolds, née Gordon, 23rd of the 10th. She lived from 1950, the 10th of the 3rd, 2000. And that was from Rosemary A. Baker.
Next, we have the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got quite a crop of letters this week. Probably everybody's staying at home and nothing better to do but vent their opinions to the Chronicle. So, but they're all interesting, so you know, do bear with us. So we start off with a letter from Sue Wood entitled "Encourage Cycling." "Sir, I have cycled in and around Winchester since we moved here over 40 years ago. I am now over 80 and have used an electric bike for nearly 20 years. I have always felt very safe riding and found drivers of vehicles almost always very considerate. I wear a high visibility jacket with long sleeves and always make clear signals, especially if I'm turning right. The two improvements which I would most appreciate are, first, an advanced cyclist's lane at traffic lights, and second, a cyclist's lane for the hill climbs. Quite often traffic builds up behind me as I cycle uphill, which feels safe but antisocial. I have never experienced any concerns about cycling along north walls, a flat and easy road. However, I have become used to increasing levels of traffic very slowly. Many people I speak to are horrified that I still cycle. Many would like to, but are too frightened. This is a request to traffic planners for any help you can give us to encourage more cyclists onto the roads, and perhaps starting with the two suggestions I made above. Cycling in a town is the quickest and easiest method of getting around, and as others have said, if more of us cycle, less will travel by car. So that letter was from Sue Wood, Laneston Close, Week, Winchester.
Too many cars. This is from Terry Bond. Sir, reply to Dr. Burwood's letter on cycling. Oh dear, Dr. Burwood really does not like cycling or cyclists, does he? Letter September the 24th. While I find myself agreeing with some of his points, such as electric buses or trams being the future and cycles not being suitable for all, he sets the tone straight away by saying that he's concerned about the increased support for cycling within the city and that they are adversely affecting motorists and bus users. He goes on to say that cycling is antisocial behaviour and an inefficient use of narrow roads. Since when were cars an efficient means of using narrow roads? He goes on to point out the tailbacks caused by a cyclist toiling up the city's hilly streets. Perhaps these are due to being unable to overtake said cyclist because of the motorised traffic coming down the hill. May I quote one more of his sentences? Bicycles are fine when there are only a few of them on quiet roads, but a saturation point is easily reached, beyond which they begin to obstruct one another, and especially other traffic. Replace the word bicycles with cars, and I would fully agree. Winchester's roads date back to the days of horse traffic, an animal which takes up about the same amount of road space as a cycle. Let's keep the cars on the edge of the city and bring the passengers in by bus. Perhaps we could then... Perhaps we could these newfangled motorised scooters on hire during ones with a seat for the less agile, including ones with a seat for the less agile. By the way, I speak as one who regularly commuted by bike from Eastleigh to the city until my employer told me I must use a company car so as to be able to be on call for unsocial hours. And this was from Terry Bond, Archers Road, Eastleigh.
The previous letter referred was in reply to an earlier letter from Dr. Les Burwood. Anyway, we now have a further letter from Dr. Les Burwood entitled Cycle Fantasy. Sir, Mr. Gag, letters of October the 8th, gives us an insight into his fantasy world where many, question mark in brackets, people will give up driving their motor cars into the city and take to walking and cycling. A world he describes where, somehow, the narrow uphill roads such as St James's Lane, Romsey Road and Stockbridge Road will all have cycle lanes as well as accommodating cars and buses. It is a pity that he didn't read my letter more carefully. I certainly did not call all cycling antisocial behaviour. Despite his assertions, I didn't even mention greenhouse gas emissions, let alone blame someone else for theirs. Indeed, my letter was not about pollution, let alone climate change. My main points were about present reality and a likely future whereby cycling is and always will be a minority interest. I give several reasons why that is the case. I draw attention to the way cycling has many adverse consequences on narrow feeder roads into this small city. These points were simply not addressed by Mr. Gag, who chose to ignore them. My view is that cycling is a perfectly legitimate activity on quiet side roads and country lanes. It is quite insulting to suggest that I am dishonestly destroying our life on Earth, as alleged. How did I get such power? Irrelevant as it is to my main points about the efficient use of narrow road space, he doesn't know me, doesn't know whether I drive in Winchester, I rarely do, whether I need an electric bike, let alone my views on climate emergency. Modestly, I don't suggest cyclists choose to hold up traffic, but merely reported from observations that they often do so, and that this should be given more thought by local councils when planning movement strategies within and into the city. So that letter was from Dr. Les Burwood, Sleepers Dell Gardens, Winchester.
Gratitude, this letter's headed, from David Hill, Chairman of Play to the Crowd. Sir, as Chair of Play to the Crowd, which encompasses Theatre Royal, Winchester, the Hat Fair and Playmakers, I would like to share the huge gratitude of the organisation to the numerous supporters, over 2,000, who have contributed to the success of our critical survival appeal. When we embarked on the appeal in early July, it was with the knowledge that the future of the charity was at significant risk. The appeal simply had to succeed. We hoped that there might be contributions from charitable trusts and also from Arts Council England. But most important was going to be the response of the local community and supporters from further afield who value our fantastic programme and the Hat Fair Festival. We have been hugely gratified by the level of commitment and support, with people making a range of contributions as they are able, but of which every single pound has made a difference. Here we are now in mid-October, able to confirm that Play to the Crowd, despite immediate uncertainties around the pandemic, is safe for the foreseeable future. That success is primarily because of the loyalty, support and generosity of local people who clearly value the cultural opportunities and activity that the charity provides. Thank you, one and all. It is also essential that the community is aware of the huge commitment and work undertaken by the charity trustees and staff to facilitate the appeal. I'd particularly like to thank our CEO, Derek Newland, for his unstinting enthusiasm, belief, and sheer hard work. He would also want to join me in thanking all of you out there, as well as the talented and dedicated staff team that he works with. We look forward to welcoming many of you to Theatre Royal Winchester and to other Play the Crowd activities over the coming months. Hopefully, it will also be over the coming years, though none of us can predetermine where the COVID impact will have taken us in another 18 months' time. And that's from David Hill, Chairman of Play to the Crowd, Jury Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from Phil Yates and is entitled Achievement. Sir, I read with interest the article in last week's Chronicle, October the 15th, of Stefan Leeper Fundraising Consultancy reaching its 25th anniversary. May I congratulate Stefan and his wife Anna in reaching this achievement. I remember Stefan long before he started his business with his wife Anna, when he worked independently in the mid-1980s. Stefan, as appeal director, helped the Theatre Royal in its second important phase of fundraising, i.e. the extension of the stage and fly tower, along with the erection of new dressing rooms. We would meet local businesses interested in fundraising on a Sunday morning in the theatre, where I would briefly tell them of the theatre's history before Stefan produced plans of the proposed extensions and the costing thereof. He was successful in raising the required sum. It was a pleasure working with him. Congratulations, Stefan and Anna, on reaching the silver anniversary of your fundraising consultancy. So that letter was from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And this letter's from Darrell Henry. Reserve failure. Sir, I refer to Guy Ashton's letter, No Hole, published in last week's Hampshire Chronicle, dated October 15th. Only a Conservative could be proud of an increase in the council reserves by 2.1 million. Is he not aware that people pay their council tax and the council receives grants in order to provide services to the people of Winchester? The authority should not be claiming an increase in reserves as successful when slippage in this spend can only be described as poor management. And that's from Darrell Henry, former Winchester City Councillor, from Park Lane in Twyford.
The next letter is from Simon Lever and is entitled Leave Alone. Sir, St Giles's Hill is one of my favourite locations for walks through a natural, untouched area resplendent with a myriad species of trees. Birds and wildlife flourish in such a natural environment. Experiencing such serenity so close to Winchester Centre is awesome. My concern is that clearing trees to promote plant growth may be naive. Bluebells and other species grow where they thrive. There's a reference to an article in the Chronicle, October the 15th. There is such a joy in witnessing such a beautiful, beautifully natural area. Let us not tamper with nature, for nature knows best when left alone, and trees are essential for long-term environmental security. And that letter was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And this letter is from John Seeger Green and is entitled St Swithin. Sir, one is given to understand that the ossuary box of St Swithin is languishing in some dark, probably damp, corner of the cathedral, hidden away, uncared for and unloved. Given that St Swithin is Winchester's own saint, would it not be more proper for this reliquary to be properly cared for and on prominent display? Once upon a time, large numbers of pilgrims would check to Winchester from far and wide to pass but close to it, and maybe they will do so again, were it to be displayed. And that's from John Seeger Green from the Hospital of St Cross.
The next letter is from Barbara Baines, who is the honorary chairperson of the Winchester Combined Charities Card Society, and it is about charity Christmas cards. Sir, Christmas is coming, but what a strange and different time it will be. Regrettably, for the first time in over 30 years, the Winchester Combined Charities Card Society will not be running its usual charity Christmas card shop. Being unable to use the Tourist Information Centre and having explored a number of options, the committee reluctantly decided that our voluntary organisation could not comply adequately with government restrictions nor guarantee the safety of our volunteers. We are extremely sorry, as we know our member charities will dearly miss the revenue which is generated by receiving the full value of their sales, and are sorry to be letting down our regular customers. However, there are still some charitable options available, and I urge you to support them. Cards for Good Causes, a national organisation, plan to run a shop in the Winchester High Street, and Christmas cards can be found in local charity shops. Thank you for all your support over the years. We sincerely hope to be back in business and to welcome you for Christmas 2021. So that is from Barbara Baines, the honorary chairperson of the Winchester Combined Charities Card Society, Baring Road, Winchester. She makes reference in the letter to an organisation, Cards for Good Causes, which plans to run a shop in Winchester High Street. That shop, in fact, has now opened, and we'll be covering it when we get round to the news items later on in this recording.
And this is a letter from Edward Fennell, entitled Indifference. Sir, I endorse Mark J.A. Rowe's offer to Winchester City Council of a flag from the TV series The Last Kingdom, letters October 15th. But good luck with it. I secured from the British Library an extraordinary banner which hung in the Euston Road to promote their brilliant 2019 exhibition, Anglo-Saxon Kingdom. This featured an image of King Edgar from the Golden Charter presented to New Minster, later Hyde Abbey, in 966, an event of enormous importance subsequently for the church in Winchester. I offered the banner to the City Council for display, maybe in Hyde Gate, just a few yards from where the charter would have been held between 1110 and 1538. Professor Simon Keynes of Cambridge University, probably the world's leading Anglo-Saxon historian, supported the offer. I received no response from the City Council other than indifference. City officials would not even look at it. There's a lot of rhetoric from Winchester City Council about promoting the city's fantastic heritage. In reality, they often could not care a burnt cake for it. And that's from Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde.
The next letter is from Karen Barrett and is entitled TB Increase. Sir, I was alarmed to read your report on the increase of TB cases in Hampshire and the UK. In these COVID-dominated times, it is easy to forget about this long-established pandemic, which, according to figures for 2019, made 10 million people ill and killed 1.4 million. I take a personal interest as I was diagnosed with pulmonary TB in the 1960s when 6 months pregnant with my first baby. I spent 5 months in hospital in Southampton and had no contact with our son until he was 7 weeks old and I was no longer infectious. The shocking aspect of the annual TB fatality figures is that, unlike variants of coronavirus, this is a well-understood, treatable, curable disease which gets minimal press coverage because these days it is less prevalent in developed Western economies than in third world countries. A case of out of sight and out of mind. While TB may be compared with COVID in that both diseases can potentially infect anyone, communities where poverty and overcrowding are rife are inevitably at greater risk. The incidence of pandemics may be beyond human control, but the increasing wealth gap that causes a growing percentage of the population, whether in this country or beyond, to be disproportionately impacted is entirely due to the political decisions which perpetuate such gross inequality. And that letter was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this letter from Catherine Ferrier is entitled Unmagic. Sir, am I the only person to wince in disbelief at the huge, newly steamrolled tarmac roundabout and traffic islands that have just been manufactured by the new sports centre at Bar End? Is this really the best that can be done? Whilst the maintenance costs of grass or flowers are probably an expensive and unrealistic dream and a sculpture, silver birches or even a shrub or two might arguably obscure the driver's vision. Couldn't the planners have had a more imaginative vision? The massive expanse of black tarmac is hideous and depressing. And that's from Catherine Ferrier, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
The next letter is from Michael Etherington and it's entitled Square Traffic. Sir, for 4 or so years Some four or so years ago, the council indicated by comprehensive signage that no motor vehicles are permitted to access the square from the Green Man Junction. For about 2 weeks, the traffic and noise level dropped and the air quality improved for residents in the cathedral streets. Shortly, drivers found that no one monitored transit rather than access. Early figures showed very quickly an increase to an even higher level of vehicles than before the ban. The same effect was noticed in March 2020. Peace returned. To residents' delight, there was considerable discussion about making the square accessible for pedestrians and cyclists only, along with residents of the square and Great Minster Street. Delivery vehicles would be expected to enter via the east, that's via the Wessex Hotel. That is now successfully in operation at weekends. The reduction in pollution is appreciated. Streets such as Simmons and the two Minster streets are not just suitable for the delivery vehicles that try to drive, Streets such as Simmons Street and the two Minster streets are just not suitable for the delivery vehicles that try to drive down St Swithin Street and along them. The time has come for the city and county councils to complete their discussions and close the access from Simmons Street to the square. Everyone will gain from an improvement in air quality. In addition, the city will become even more attractive to shoppers and tourists. And that letter was from Michael Etherington, St Swithin Street, Winchester.
And this one is from Dr. A.E. Russell, and it's from Hyde Street. Sir, several years ago, I was talking to my next-door neighbour and her family from my front doorstep. A wing mirror from a white van whipped through her hair. It was clear to me that a few millimetres closer and she would have sustained a life-changing brain injury. A few years later, I heard from several different sources a story that led me to believe that a young local parent had been injured in this way, devastating the lives of that family. The tragedy is that the incremental changes that have been allowed by our city planners have brought us to a place where life-changing injury in Hyde Street is predictable. Cars and vans are now wider. More SUVs and 4x4s are now being driven at speed around the streets of our city without the changes in infrastructure to keep the residents safe. Hyde Street looked and felt like a residential road when we moved here 26 years ago. But over the years, the street parking has been removed, trees have been cut down, and the double yellow lines have changed our Roman road into something resembling an airport runway, and the 20 mile per hour speed limit being largely ignored. So, whilst I can sympathise with the motorists of Hyde Street, who have to spend a little longer in their warm, air-conditioned, air-bagged, safety-caged cars, I question the fact that their needs take priority over pedestrians and cyclists who have nothing to protect them. The residents of Hyde Street, one of the oldest of Winchester's streets, are sleeping, eating, and having their downtime just a little more than a metre from the road on either side. Most other residences locally have front gardens, wide pavements, parked cars, and occasionally grass verges and a row of trees to separate them from the noise, pollution, and outbreaks of road rage that come with the traffic. I congratulate our council for bravely taking steps to protect Hyde Street residents from more than just COVID. And that's from Dr. Russell with two lines of medical... I can't read
qualifications.
Yes. And he lives in Hyde Street, Winchester.
The next letter is from David Selby and is called Time to Review. Sir, as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, three projects affecting Winchester ought to be reassessed. One, in the Silver Hill, Saxon Gate development, more attention could be applied to the ratio of retail to residential provision, as it is now quite clear that national brands are withdrawing from expensive high street shops to concentrate more on online sales. Two, similarly for the station approach development, which was, I understand, to include a considerable amount of office accommodation, the current exodus from office to working at home is likely to continue, according to many commentators. Three, the strategy for the new hospital seems quite simple to me, not being a health expert. The existing hospital should continue to offer local services like maternity, A&E and outpatient facilities, while the new hospital could concentrate on the more serious and longer term illnesses such as cancer, strokes, heart disease and the like. This hospital would then be built with epidemics in mind, so that if this danger arises again, it could be securely locked down to prevent people from dying from the epidemic rather than the illness for which they had originally been admitted, as happened at several hospitals this year. Coronavirus is not the only epidemic to have caused a problem in hospitals. Perhaps people have forgotten about the MRSA, from which a friend of mine died, having been admitted for a routine operation. Reconsideration of points 1 and 2 above might hopefully reduce the pressure on greenfield sites around the city being eaten up by property developers, and more people living within the existing city could bring more life into the city and also help support existing retail businesses and the hospitality sector. All the above projects could hopefully now be developed with the environment and climate change policies as their guiding principles. That was from David Selby, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Right, and this letter is from Rupert Pitt, in praise of the NHS. Sir, Mr. Moody writes, letters October the 1st, asking for more uplifting letters. Here is one. From January to August, I felt low, possibly with chronic fatigue syndrome. On September the 2nd, my legs were hard to use and swollen. I dropped a letter into St. Paul's Surgery, September the 7th, and was given an appointment for the next day. The doctor gave me a blood test. On September the 10th, 2 days later, my doctor texted me out of hours and arranged an appointment for 3 p.m. that day. I was advised it was inflammatory arthritis and prescribed two medicines and painkiller. My doctor then arranged for an X-ray for me for September the 25th, a Friday. By September the 28th, the X-rays were sent, and my doctor advises that I will have an appointment with rheumatology. I have an appointment on October the 5th, a Monday at rheumatology, most professional. Medicines change to more steroids and others. I am advised I should have a CAT scan, computer-aided tomography, and further X-rays. On October the 7th, I received a letter from rheumatology advising October the 18th. A CAT scan has been arranged. And October the 20th, more X-rays. That is within 2 days. Thus, in the space of 6 weeks, I have had two X-rays, a CT scan, two doctor's appointments, and my doctor calling me out of hours to assist. The range of skill and the speed with which I have been treated is brilliant. I've had 4 operations, 3 stomach, 1 eye, and I've never received such professional care and consideration. My mother had three hip replacements at Sarum Road Private Hospital, and the NHS care certainly compares excellently with private care. It's time to praise the NHS for all it does. And that's from Rupert Pitt, St Cross Road, Winchester.
That concludes the letters. I hope you found quite a variety this week. I hope you found them all of interest. There are no items of historical interest this week. I don't know whether they weren't put in the paper for what reason they weren't they didn't appear in the paper. Anyway, so we go on straight on to the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment, which will then will be followed by a letter from Westminster from Steve Bryan, and then we will, after that, there will be first person. So the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment is titled "Toxic Culture, Police Disciplinary Hearing." Truly shocking behaviour has been revealed in the police disciplinary hearing currently ongoing. Officers of the Serious and Organised Crime Unit based at the Basingstoke station are alleged to have engaged in racist, sexist, homophobic, transphobic and misogynist comments. Apologies for that. Getting a bit tongue-tied this morning. It sounds like a failed edition for a gritty 1970 police drama, The Sweeney. The toxic level of vitriol was striking in a police force well into the 21st century. Eight officers are disputing the allegations of gross misconduct. Should the case be proved, then it goes without saying that they have no role in any police force, and the question should be asked about how they ever got into Hampshire Constabulary in the first place. But for Hampshire Constabulary, dealing with such officers will have been the easy part. It then has to repair its damaged public reputation and the trust that it will deal equally with members of society. The force may argue that one rogue unit gone bad. Another question to be asked is, how do we, the public, know that there are no others?
And this is a letter from Westminster. The NHS, both locally and nationally, remain my priority. I've written about that once or twice before in the Chronicle and, of course, in my own publications. Over the past decade, I have tried to really understand the local NHS and support what is in our best interest in line with clinical advice. Always remembering politicians do not design health services. Maintaining those services in a busy district general hospital, DGH, with all the interdependencies across social, community and primary care is a complex business, and we're fortunate in Alex Whitfield to have a chief executive on top of her game. We can't agree on everything, but we're both confident enough individuals to see criticism and challenge as not rude, but part of the job and something that stressed tests policy on a really important subject. As the old Winchester and Eastleigh Trust came together with Basingstoke, compromises were required around the centralisation of services when it came to urgent stroke care and, more recently, acute orthopaedics. This summer it got serious as Hampshire hospitals embarked on the Hampshire Together programme, and I've worked incredibly hard, including writing to thousands of households at one point, to get constituents involved in one or more of the virtual engagement sessions. Even so, it is a process which has, for some, passed by unnoticed, and that is hardly surprising in the midst of a pandemic. It's why I have said publicly, privately, and in the House of Commons, this is a strange time to seek major changes to the local NHS if your aim is to do so with wide-scale engagement and public consent. Nonetheless, Hampshire Together has produced a series of options upon which it plans to formally consult early next year, and we should be clear that will pose some very difficult questions for Winchester. There is no question the Trust faces significant further pressure to centralise some services. Some of that external, around neonatal care, for instance. Some of it not. I have consistently said this project, because it is part of the 40 new hospitals, is primarily about replacing Basingstoke Hospital, and the Prime Minister confirmed confirmed that earlier this month. But we're clear, as I promised last December, it will see significant investment at the RHCH, and I plead guilty to the charge. I helped make that happen. And I remain in the view of Winchester needs a district general hospital with an emergency department and consultant-led maternity services. I know that's extremely challenging, and the Trust, as ministers who I speak to a great deal about this, want a clinical model that does best by us all, but I would urge them to keep an open mind and not to give up on Winchester Hospital because we have not. As I have said for a decade and more, I've never met a constituent who does not want to be taken to the right place to get the right treatment when they're acutely unwell, and that requires services that give us the best chance should illness strike. And that's from Steve Bryan, our MP.
First person is entitled The River That Was a TV Star, and it's written by George Hayter. It is one of my favourite television series, and I've just been talking to the plumber about it. Turns out that the plumber likes Howard's Way even more than I do. He's got the box set. A smile came across his face when I mentioned the show, and he put down his tools to reminisce about the characters. I began to wonder if he would ever turn his attention back to fitting our new taps. Most Hampshire people over 45 probably share the enthusiasm of me and the plumber for Howard's Way, which finished 30 years ago next month. The last programme in its five-year run of six sunny series went out on November the 25th, 1990. It probably has more fans in Hampshire than anywhere else, because the series was filmed here. The storylines revolve around two wealthy families and a boatyard on a river crammed with sleek white yachts. The featured river was the Hamble, arguably Britain's capital of yachting, lined with marinas, sailing clubs and wooded hillsides, and serenely flowing into Southampton Water and the Solent. The Hamble was, and still is, largely a luxurious pleasure ground for the suntanned rich. The programme's main characters idly bob up and down on the water, take the helm on racing yachts, and zing about on water skis, while on land they plot against their rivals and cheat on their partners. Booze is always flowing and the sky is usually blue. It was great escapist viewing for anyone longing to be rich and successful, as I always have. Making a strong impression on me all those years ago was Charles Frere, the suave young executive. I envied his charm and his cutting-edge IT screen, on which he would summon a Price's rundown of his substantial equity holdings. I also admired Tom Howard, the likeable yacht designer with go-ahead ideas, and even had a sneaking admiration for Ken Masters, the balding man with sideboards and a brain full of nasty schemes to do down his business rivals. It wasn't his roguish hairstyle or his nasty motivation that I admired. It was his endless ability to think up business schemes, nasty or otherwise. I didn't think much of Leo, Tom's soppy son. Leo didn't do enough to keep his sensual girlfriend happy. Jack Rolfe was the stubborn old-timer in partnership with realist Tom, thwarting Tom's plans to update the boatyard with modern ideas like fiberglass. Howard's Way was BBC's answer to Dallas, a sensational American drama series about feuding rich people in Texas. First broadcast in 1978, Dallas soon achieved a record global audience and stayed on air for 13 years. Dallas made the world aware of the American city of the same name. That could not be said of Howard's Way and Hampshire. The river where the British drama was shot was never named in the script, as far as I remember, so most viewers wouldn't have known that it was Hampshire or the Hamble River. Seeing my home county on telly made me very proud, and Howard's Way made me appreciate how lucky we are to live in Hampshire. even if we're not as rich as Charles Freer, we can enjoy the nautical atmosphere at Burselden, ride the pink ferry at Hamble-le-Rice, and walk along the riverbank. We can drink in the Jolly Sailor, featured in the programme, and in real life, one of the most attractive pubs in the country. TV production is always improving and storylines, too, can look dated after 30 years, so I hesitate to lavish £30.99 on the box set. I'm sure Charles Freer didn't get rich by wasting money on old TV programmes. Maybe Howard's Way is best left as a memory. Might be good value, though. The plumber assured me that, over the years, he has watched his 78-episode box set several times. There are no special announcements this week, but just a reminder on that summertime ends this weekend on Saturday night and Sunday morning, so the clocks will go back by 1 hour. So there's, as from Sunday onwards, sunrise will be at about 6:45 in the morning and sunset will be about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you yourself have problems with the recordings you're receiving from us, please telephone Liz LeGrease on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229 and speak to Liz. We now move on to items of general news interest. Winchester Hospital seeing more coronavirus patients. The number of COVID-19 patients in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester is continuing to climb again. On Monday, the most recent day for which figures are available, there were 34 patients compared to 20 the previous week. Winchester District has seen 3 deaths since last Tuesday, bringing the number of people to die in the pandemic to 80. The number of infected people in the Winchester District continues to rise steadily, with double figure increases most days this month. The figure for the Winchester District on Tuesday was 797. In the Hampshire County Council area that includes Winchester, the tally has risen from last Tuesday's 7,130 to 8,063, a rise of 933, the highest increase since the pandemic was at its peak in the spring. Some 96 new cases have been reported to the Winchester District in the last seven days till Tuesday. The figure for the previous 7 days is 90. Winchester District comprises more than the city and is the city council area which stretches from Mitchell Dover in the north to Southwick in the south, from Sparsholt in the west to Bramdean in the east. Data shows that the infection rate in the city council district is 636.3 people in every 100,000 since the start of the crisis in March. The rate for new cases in the district for the last 7 days to Monday, October the 19th, the latest available, is 68.9 people per 100,000 cases. On the week to October the 5th, the figure was 67.3. That's 67.3. Nationally, 241 people have died in the UK on Tuesday, the highest number since June the 5th. This brings the number of confirmed reported deaths to 43,967. Only 2 schools have reported cases this week: Newtown Soberton in the Meon Valley and Osborne Special School. The number of deaths in Hampshire hospitals is now 622. The figure for fatalities at the Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, which includes the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, is 165. For the other local county trust, Portsmouth Hospital 237, Solent 2, Southern Health 17, and University Hospital Southampton 201. Regarding COVID patients admitted to hospital, the latest figure is 34 reported on Saturday, up one on Friday in the southeastern region, which includes Hampshire. There are today 322 with the condition in hospital, up 101 yesterday, with 18 on ventilators today, up 7, according to the Office for National Statistics. The numbers are not broken down for hospitals in Hampshire. Total number of deaths since the start of the pandemic of people who have had a positive COVID positive test result for COVID-19 and died within 28 days of the first positive test remain Hampshire, 733, that's 53 per 100,000 people. Portsmouth, 79, that's 36.8 per 100,000. And Southampton, 124, that's 49.1 per 100,000. The Winchester district figure, the city council area, is 80, a rate of 64.1 per 100,000, higher than the three other areas mentioned.
And this is an article headed Mapping COVID to a Local Level. And there's a map with blue and green showing Winchester and the surrounding area. A map of coronavirus cases across the UK has revealed which areas of Winchester and its surroundings currently have some of the highest rates of infection. The government map breaks down coronavirus rates into smaller geographic areas, including nations and counties. At a lower level, it breaks them into postcode-linked areas that are used for a range of government statistics. Areas are colour-coded by their rate, and with purples and blues being the highest and greens and yellows the lowest. In our area, the highest number of cases in the week to October the 14th, when the latest figures are available, was Winchester, Central and South, which had 15, and a weekly rolling rate of 136.4 cases per 100,000 people. Springvale and Itchen Abyss, which had 8 cases, and a weekly rolling rate of 116.3 cases per 100,000 people. It is good news for the areas of South Wanston, Sutton Scotney and Mitchell Dever, where the map reports the rate as suppressed, meaning that there have been no recorded cases in the previous week. However, given this map is based on data from the previous week, it does not take into account the latest infections, while the infections shown are based on home address.
Sorry, those past two articles were not actually very positive, but I feel it, you know, I'm sure that you were wanting to know what the situation is locally, because we get a lot of national information on the on the news.
But it was a bit complicated.
But I'm afraid I hope it was rather complicated, and I hope you know you were able to follow it. But the main thing is keep safe, and we'll get through. We mentioned in the letters. Saying that the charity Christmas card sale in the Guildhall will not go ahead, but here is an article about the charity Christmas card shop, which has opened its doors. Winchester High Street boasts a new charity Christmas card shop from this week. Located in the old Whittard shop, it will sell cards and gifts on behalf of local and national charities until the middle of December. The arrival of the store was welcomed by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, and MP Steve Bryan, who both visited on its first day of trading. "This is great news for Winchester," said Mr. Bryan. "The charity Christmas card shop has long been a fixture in the city, and it's very sad news because of the coronavirus that it was no longer possible to hold it in the Tourist Information Centre. But cometh the hour and cometh the ladies, I'm really grateful for Cathy Wallace for stepping forward and working with Cards for Good Causes. She and local area manager Sarah Armstrong have worked tirelessly to develop this project and ensure the shop will be open on time. There's a picture of the shop with the manager, Kathy Wallace, the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Patrick Cunningham, and our MP, Steve Bryan.
Parents are pressing for safe crossing on the way to school. Parents at Winchester's newest school are pressing council leaders for a new safe crossing in Andover Road. They say lives are put at risk every day as they cross the busy road to Barton Farm Primary Academy, which opened last month. They have roped in City MP Steve Bryan to boost their campaign. Mr. Bryan joined a group of mums and the head teacher, Nicola Wells, at the school run to see for himself the problem. Catherine Defty, who is leading the push, said, "We are in the extremely lucky position to be able to walk our children all the way to this beautiful new school. However, all the benefits of this are placed at risk every day due to having to cross the busy Andover Road. A fatal combination of the 50 mile per hour speed limit, no accessible crossing, and poor visibility is an accident waiting to happen. An accident that even an adult would have less than a 5% chance of surviving." Mr. Bryan, MP, added, "The Barton Farm development rightly has a new school at its heart, but it serves a wider catchment, and that means parents have to cross from Weekend Hairstock every day at a spot few ever did before. This part of Winchester is now heavily residential on both sides of the road, and that is only going to increase as new houses come online. It is fairly obvious that we need something new at this part of Andover Road, because without a crossing, and very possibly a lower speed limit, we could be one moment away from a very nasty accident." The MP recognised existing efforts undertaken by nearby Headbourne Worthy Parish Council, local councillors and nearby residents who themselves plan to petition Hampshire County Council next month. Nicola Wells said, "We have a strong focus on sustainability at Barton Farm. We are actually seeking Eco Schools accreditation, so I'm thrilled that so many of our families choose to walk, scoot or cycle to school to protect the environment and to support a healthy lifestyle. It is vitally important that our young families have a safe route to school each day, and a crossing on the Andover Road would really help."
Plans for the city's festive activities. Winchester Business Improvement District has announced its plans for the festive season. This will include coordinating the city's Christmas lights, and new for this year is the Winchester Nutcracker Christmas Trail. Each year, the Business Improvement District coordinates citywide festive lighting schemes and the annual Christmas lights switch-on event, which marks the start of the festive season. This year, due to the pandemic, the switch-on event, which usually attracts thousands of people, will not be able to go ahead. The lights will be switched on during November, and the Business Improvement District will instead be filming video content which will be shared online throughout the season. The Nutcracker Christmas Trail from the November the 14th to January the 4th will see families try to find the names of the 14 Nutcracker Kings and enter a draw to win a special prize. Sarah Davis, Projects and Operations Manager for Winchester Business Improvement District, said, "While we are sad not to be able to organise our usual Christmas lights switch-on event this year, which is such a wonderful community event to kick-start the festive season, we are excited to be exploring new ways to celebrate Christmas in Winchester. We are working closely with many local organisations."
The National Trust is set to cut nearly 1,300 jobs. Almost 1,300 jobs will go at the National Trust as it seeks to save 100 million as a result of the coronavirus crisis. The organisation runs Winchester City Mill, Mottisfont Abbey and Hinton Ampner near Alresford. The Trust, which warned in July that it might make 1,200 people redundant, has said that it is making 514 compulsory redundancies. A further 782 people have taken voluntary redundancy as part of cuts to the jobs, which will save around 59 million a year. The Trust is also saving around 41 million in annual costs from areas such as reducing travel and office costs and cutting marketing and print spend in favour of digital communications. The coronavirus crisis hit almost every aspect of income for the charity, which has 5.6 million members, shutting all of its houses, gardens, car parks, shops and cafes, and stopping holidays and events. The figures are in addition to 162 people who were previously told they were being made redundant, as £124 million of projects were delayed, and who bring the total job losses linked to the pandemic to 1,458. The National Trust said that it had halved the number of compulsory redundancies it had planned following consultation. The changes to the plans have seen jobs in maintenance and curatorial roles retained, along with roles focused on helping children learn, the charity said. The Trust said it had already saved millions of pounds through freezing recruitment, drawing on reserves, borrowing and deferring projects. Director General Hilary McGrady thanked staff, volunteers and members who shared their views on the proposals, saying the consultations had enabled the Trust to adapt its plans while still making the savings it required.
New album by College Choir. Winchester College Chapel Choir has released a new Christmas album. The choir recorded the album in early January at Merton College in Oxford. Sarah Songhurst, Director of Communications at the college, described Merton as one of the best places to record in the country. She said, "It is atmospheric with incredible acoustics." The choir recorded 14 pieces over 14 days, accompanied by Onyx Brass, a professional ensemble. Singing and recording for up to 7 days, 7 hours a day, it was an incredible experience for the pupils as they learned about production and recording. The album, called A Winter's Night, was released on Signum Classics label on October the 16th and is available from Cornflowers on College Street.
Animals spitting at police in pandemic. Police officers in Hampshire have been spat at more than 100 times during the pandemic, it has been revealed. Between March and September this year, Hampshire Constabulary recorded 115 instances of spitting. The incidents have been described as vile, disgusting and awful. Officers are now being given the opportunity to self-isolate in hotel rooms. Over the same period last year, the force recorded 120 incidents, 100 of which between March and September. Zoe Wakefield, chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, said the rise is concerning. She added, "In any situation, spitting is vile behaviour, but it really is not an acceptable part of a police officer's job to turn up to a crime to help members of the public and have coronavirus weaponised against them. The courts need to play their part and implement the maximum sentences they can if a person is assaulting a police officer." Hampshire Constabulary said to date no officers or staff who'd been spat at or coughed at are reported to have contracted the virus, and no offer of hotel accommodation has been taken up. In a statement, the force added, attacking a police officer, either verbally or physically, when we're trying to do our duty is appalling behaviour and will not be tolerated. People who deliberately assault, spit or cough on police officers and other emergency workers will always be dealt with rigorously.
The future of civic sites in Bar End. Bar End is set to look quite different in the near future if Winchester City Council plans come together. Cabinet members were set to meet as the Chronicle went to press to discuss three separate schemes. The first was the new park and ride site, which is set to replace the former Voltex building off Barfield Close. Councillors were due to agree funding for the project, which has been aided by a £5.6 million grant from Enterprise M3 Local Enterprise Partnership. If agreed, Wilmot Dixon will be appointed to construct the decked car park with a green wall to aid the council's drive to be carbon neutral. Wilmot Dixon is also expected to move its vehicles and materials out of the Bar End depot once it has finished building the leisure centre. This will leave most of the units empty. Cabinet members are expected to discuss how these will be marketed. On the meeting agenda, it said that members would debate whether to approve a budget of £20,000 for associated marketing and a further £10,000 for valuations to better inform the potential site value and target market of developers. The final scheme to be discussed was the former goods shed in Barfield Close, which dates back to Victorian times. A report recommends the authority agrees to its retention. It adds that it should be redeveloped for use of a small business. It also proposed that £20,000 in funding is granted to commission architectural drawings.
David named in Queen's birthday list. The founder of a life-saving local charity has spoken about being mentioned in the Queen's Birthday Honours. David Williamson of Mian Valley Heart Start, who has lived in Bishop's Waltham since 1967, was awarded the British Empire Medal this year. His charity hosts free sessions to teach community groups how to save lives with CPR and other techniques. Mr. Williams' award is also recognition of the role he played in starting a community first responders scheme in the village. This is an enormous honour, and I'm very overwhelmed to be a recipient of an award on the Queen's birthday list, he said. It came completely out of the blue, so much so that when I first received the notification, I initially thought it was a scam. But seriously, the award, while given to me, is in recognition of the tremendous work that is done by teams of people. I couldn't have made a difference here in Bishop's Waltham without the fantastic teams of people ready to join in and work with me, so this is as much recognition for them as it is for me. It was on his retirement from a distinguished 33-year career with the ambulance service in 2000 that David turned his efforts to community health initiatives. He developed Mian Valley Heart Start, which is affiliated to the British Heart Foundation.
Action is needed over State of Itchen. A campaign to help save chalk streams is gathering pace. A chalk streams summit was held in London to discuss the threats to streams such as the Itchen and Test, with dismay growing about their worsening state. Lord Chidgey attended the summit and has raised the issue recently, citing the pollution of the rivers Arle and Itchen from agricultural runoff. Lord Chidgey, who lives in Alsford, said, "The plans are encouraging, but the reality is the authorities are working to a timescale of returning the quality of all our rivers to a good standard by 2050. This is far too late, particularly as the demand for clean water supplies increases all the time. I hope that the forthcoming environmental bill will provide Parliament with the opportunity to give these issues the attention they deserve. He has been critical of farming operations, particularly watercress, and the soon-to-close Bakkavor plant near the town. It's important that Bakkavor are held to account before they leave the area and that penalties are swift and severe. Others inclined to break the law must be discouraged. Bakkavor was washing vegetables grown elsewhere and the water was then discharged into the Arl. It is closing the plant this autumn, citing the loss of a major customer. It comes as the Environment Agency is looking nationally at pollution into rivers from farming. The charity Salmon and Trout Conservation has been campaigning on the issue, raising the threat of chemicals harming invertebrates, including mayflies and caddisflies.
A surge in sales of homes for £1 million or more. Sales of homes for £1 million or more have surged since lockdown, with many Londoners relocating to Winchester. According to a study by estate agent Savills, the South East has seen a 6,560% rise in £1 million property sales compared to this time last year. Lucian Cook, head of residential research, said that buyers have been looking for more space and a lifestyle change. He added that those moving out of London and looking for a less dramatic lifestyle have moved to places such as Tunbridge Wells, Guildford and Winchester. Lifestyle relocation has been a big theme in the market since lockdown began to ease, and this is very clearly reflected in the numbers, said Mr. Cook. In April, Winchester estate agents reported a sharp increase in the number of people seeking to flee the capital to move to the local area. Suzanne Diamond, lettings director of Charters, said of the increased demand, "All our offices have noticed this. There are a lot of people, predominantly families, wanting rural properties and substantial ones rather than in centres. All are wanting to move quickly. We had someone come down, offer on a property and take the keys to move in the next day." They have said it's because of the coronavirus situation and wanting somewhere that they believe is safer. They want isolated country homes.
And finally, a contribution from Belgarum. Belgarum used to be quite a feature in the past with amusing articles, but he does surface from time to time with quite interesting things about Winchester. Anyway, his contribution this week, I assume Belgarum is a man, but anyway, maybe it's a lady, I'm not sure. Anyway, the contribution this week is Winchester, what's in a name? For nearly 50 years, it has been a source of confusion. Winchester and the word city. Winchester City Council, set up in the reorganisation of local government in 1974, covers more than the city, in fact, a swathe of central Hampshire. The coronavirus statistics, do the figures pertain to the city itself or to the whole district? They actually pertain to the whole district. With the number of city inhabitants being fewer than half the total, the numbers can be important. What is the population of Winchester? According to many national journalists, when writing about the city, it is more than 100,000. In fact, the city has fewer than 40,000. Journalists just see the number for Winchester City Council and assume. Time, perhaps, to go back to having a Winchester Rural District Council as well as a City Council. But with the pressure moving to having just one council for most of Hampshire, that would be unlikely. That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks go to our editors Sue Frayne, Anne Brew, Pat Whitfield and Jane Thomas, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our reader, Tony Bergstrom. And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.